Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Hello and welcome to Business Matters here on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. Later in this week's programme, I'll be finding out about what was a record year for Ireland West Airport in Knock. The airport now serves 22 international destinations, and Donegal passengers form a not insignificant part of the 830,000 plus who flew through Knock in 2024. But first, casting the net out, and here's a nice story about a successful Killybegs-based business. Killybegs Energy recently won the Best Startup Award at the Donegal Enterprise Awards. Run by a father and son, Mick and Michael O'Donnell, Killybegs Energy produces high-quality wood chips, logs and pellets using locally sourced sustainable materials and renewable energy. Essentially, it's a successful spin-off from the well-established and award-winning Island Seafoods, which Mick set up back in the 1980s. Well, that business has adapted to the ever-changing nature of the fishing industry and continues to make great strides, supplying numerous major retailers with its trademark Atlantic Treasures seafood products. Well, Michael O'Donnell is Business Development and Marketing Director, and I spoke to him about the two businesses and the strong emphasis on green initiatives and what is an energy efficiency culture. But we started with the story behind Killybegs Energy.
Yeah, thanks a million, Chris. We had launched Killybegs Energy just over 12 months ago, and initially it had started out as kind of a subsidiary of Island Seafoods. And the reason being was we had a wind turbine, we have a hydroelectric power plant and a wind turbine on site, and we had excess electricity that we couldn't sell out to the grid. So we were looking at different opportunities or different ways that we would kind of utilize that electricity. So we had some energy consultants come in and kind of advise and give us a hand to see what we could do. And one of the options was that we would install at the factory an absorption chiller, and it was to reduce the electrical load from what the factory was using at Island Seafoods for the blast freezers. So we kind of had done a lot of homework and a lot of work on that, and we decided we would go ahead with it. And there was some funding available from the Brexit Adjustment Reserve, the BAR Fund, and we decided to put a small production plant on site along beside Island Seafoods, and it would produce biomass pellets, so pellets that would feed an absorption chiller. And that would kind of reduce then the electrical load that was needed for our electricity consumption. But I suppose with timing and everything else, there was a massive downturn in the fish industry, and we kind of had to relook at the structure of the business then. So we decided that it would be a standalone business then, and we would produce the pellet up at that factory then. And it was then it would be utilizing the energy from the wind turbine. So to start out, we started then Killybegs Energy. There was a lot of interest in it straight off the ground, and we had a couple of people that we were kind of going to contract pack for. So there's new legislation that has come in to Ireland. It'll be coming in on the 1st of September of this year. So we are producing at the moment wood logs into net bags and into plastic bags, and we also produce industrial wood chip, and that's for pellet or wood boilers. So the pellet thing actually took a back seat because there was so much interest in what we were doing with the wood log and the wood chip. So we have on site a small kiln, a 300 kilowatt kiln, and it puts the wood log into the kiln, and it brings down the moisture content. The EU legislation now is coming in. The moisture content of wood log is to be 25%, and under. And from the 1st of September, that is going to go up to under 20%. So at the moment, with our kiln dried log, we're getting it between 15 and 20% moisture.
And this, of course, means that it actually burns better?
Yeah, burns better. So, and that's what they're trying to do, and that's the legislation they're bringing in. So what we found was we kind of had a point of difference, a niche that we could, because it's more or less a circular economy, we're bringing the wood in from culture and then from local forestries, and then we're drying it with renewable energy and then packing it up there as well. So it's kind of a unique point that we have, I suppose, that's maybe different to what the log you would see out there, you know.
So ticking a lot of the boxes.
We're trying. I mean, I suppose the background of Island Seafoods was always we had a kind of an interest in the green ethos, you know, and I suppose this is following on from that too. So what we want to do is launch our own brand of wood log into retailers and into kind of garages and places in Ireland. And, you know, be able to tell that story of, you know, the circular economy while being able to do that as well. So that's kind of what the branding, I suppose that's where I come in. I suppose my background would have been the branding and the marketing of the seafood products we had out, you know, out on the shelves to do in Dunn's and Tesco and Musgrave's and everywhere else. So from there, I suppose that branding thing, I'll be taking that forward and trying to brand these renewable, you know, energy-driven wood log and everything else. So it's kind of a big project for us, but there's a lot of interest kind of early on, and there's a lot of we're contract packing at the moment for others until we get the branding piece as well and kind of going from there and kind of launching it ourselves. You know?
And if you get a couple of really big orders, have you the capacity to upscale?
Yeah, I mean, the capacity is there, no problem at all. I mean, the kiln at the moment fits, you know, probably five times what we'd be able to pack, if you know what I mean. So it's just about bringing in more people and everything else. We were very lucky in that the local enterprise office helped us greatly with the employment grant. So we employed two new people there at the end of last summer. And we're just kind of building on that now. And we have some part-time people coming in doing packing and everything else as well. So there's a lot of work with it and a lot of ironing out things and ironing out production, you know, that you things you don't think of. And it's a brand new industry to us. So there's always things we're learning, you know, but it seems to be going good now. And hopefully going forward, we can grow it and see how it goes, you know.
Well, we shall certainly watch with interest. Now, let's get to delve a little bit further into the background, because we've touched on Island Seafoods, the company set up back as far as the mid-80s. And initially it was very much processing, I think, prawns at the beginning, and then began to diversify. So maybe you can give us a quick history lesson on the origins of the company.
Yeah, well, I suppose way back in 1986, my father would have started the business. And it was mainly producing maybe herring roe and shelling prawns and things like that. And from there, I suppose the industry has been up and down, and we've seen different kind of peaks and troughs throughout it. But initially, or, you know, for those past nearly, well, 35 years anyway, it was processing whole round mackerel, whole round herring, horse mackerel, which is scad and things like that. And then in 2009, we launched the brand Atlantic Treasures. So 2009, 2010, and then from there, I suppose the brand is kind of what's now the industry has kind of seen a downturn, and there's the bulk side of the fishing is not gone completely, but definitely there've been massive, massive cuts in the past four years. Brexit has seen a reduction of 25%, and this year going into 2024, they have been looking at a reduction of about, well, it was supposed to be 22, but they've got that back to about 14% reduction in the mackerel quota. The industry itself has seen a lot of kind of turmoil, I suppose, for the past maybe year to 2 years. But the branded side of the business that we do, the smoked mackerel that we do, it's still going strong and everything's good with that. So we're launching into a couple of new retailers now in the new year. We have a contract we've just signed with Lidl. And then we also supply Aldi, we supply Tesco, Dunn Stores, BWG, Musgraves. So we're kind of covered on the Irish market now. And I suppose in the next probably 12 to 24 months, we'll be looking at the export market as well. So there's a lot going on there, and I suppose it's the smoked mackerel at the moment, and we'll be looking at a hot smoked salmon product as well. We'll be relaunching some new hot smoked salmon products with different flavors and glazes as well. So there's a good bit going on with the Atlantic Treasures brand kind of into the next 12, 24 months too. So it's all good, and if we can see it growing, that's the main thing, you know.
Yeah, and as you've certainly mentioned there, I mean, you have to move with the changing times and the changing market and adapting to it. And during all this time, Michael, there was an interest, yourself and the others involved, in the whole renewable energy side of things and being energy efficient. And so tell us a little bit about you went along the road of trying to cut down your own electricity usage. So you had a hydroelectricity power plant and then more laterally a wind turbine.
Yeah, yeah. Back in, I suppose, you see, 2007, we commissioned the hydroelectric power plant. So it generates about 250 kilowatt of energy, and it runs from the dam up behind the factory into a river, and we get the water from the river then, and it generates the electricity for us. So we have that commissioned since 2007. And then at the end of 2020, start of 21, we commissioned the wind turbine as well. So the wind turbine was commissioned as an 850 kilowatt wind turbine, but we produce about 500 kilowatt of that energy, and we use a lot of it. We use up to 500, but I suppose the extra 350, that was where kind of the pain point was for us, because we had nothing, we couldn't use that extra 350. So that's where the idea for the wood chip came along then.
Yeah.
So we can only export a certain amount, I think 150, 120 or 50 kilowatt. We use a certain amount then at the factory, and there's another factory on site that uses it as well. So then the excess then will be pumping up into the kiln, and the kiln will be drying the wood log with it as well. So I suppose it's kind of, it works for everything now, if you know what I mean. And it's good that it'll be kind of, you know, a renewable side of the business too, that, you know, the wood log will have that story to tell as well. So, we've won, I suppose, over the years, we've won lots of awards for our kind of renewable story and what we were doing, because there was other things as well. It wasn't just the hydro and it wasn't just the wind turbine. We had different kind of initiatives we brought in the factory, whether it was maybe lighting or things like that, rainwater harvesting. We've always tried to do something a wee bit different, or trying to reduce our carbon footprint. So, which was a big kind of a big push for us. Do you know what I mean? And we had to, over the years, I mean, we've had green team meetings where we met with staff, or we've pulled them all in and seen what they can see and where they can see reductions and stuff. So I think it's important to involve everybody and see what everybody's opinion is, because you'll not be able to see everything and you'll not be able to notice everything, but there'll be people on the ground or in the factory floor that maybe will notice something that, you know, you won't notice. And I think that's always important, is to try and get them to, you know, be involved, if you know what I mean. And they feel like they own it as well, you know what I mean? Then they, you know, they see something working and that was their idea, you know, and it's good for them to get buy-in there, you know.
So you, in many ways, can be an example for other companies. And I think I'm right in saying, I don't know if it's still the case, but at one time you were feeding some of your excess power back into the grid. There was a scheme called, the refit tariff. So you actually got paid a certain amount for your surplus electricity. Is that right?
We still are as well. The hydro, the wastewater treatment plant that we have on site for the water, the hydro feeds that, and then the excess of that is exported into the grid, and that's through the refit program. And then the wind turbine as well, obviously we're feeding the factory, we're now feeding the kiln with the Killybegs energy, and then any excess we go over and above, we can export about 120 kilowatts back to the grid as well. So we're selling, we have a contract with Bord Gáis for both of them, so we sell back into Bord Gáis for them. Yep.
And the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, there are numerous grants available, there's assistance, good advice out there. So I'm sure you would encourage companies who are maybe thinking of going down this road, you know, there are supports there that can be availed of.
There's supports there, definitely. And we worked with some great energy consultants too. And there's, you know, vouchers and supports to get to, take consultants in and, you know, have them advise you. And I think that's probably a first step for everybody, because a lot of that would be free of charge, if you know what I mean. There's great supports out there for companies to, you know, to avail of. And I think that's one of the most important things, is to try and get those people in to kind of advise you on what can be done. Because, you know, it's everybody's trying to run a business at the end of the day. Nobody has time to be doing everything. And it's good when you can get experts in and it's free of charge and they'll advise on what to do and what not to do, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the fish processing business, the electricity costs, all the freezing and cold storage, they are a massive part of your costs. So if you can bring them down, it makes a big difference to that bottom line.
Yeah, it's crazy what the cost of, well, blast freezing especially, because you're blast freezing, you know, whole fish. So you're trying to get it down to a certain temperature by a certain time. So it's always kind of the electricity costs of blast freezing fish is crazy. And then with that as well, then you have cold, big cold stores and everything else. So, I mean, the way it is and the way the industry is now, everybody's looking at the bottom line and everybody's trying to reduce their costs as much as they can. Do you know what I mean? You know, years ago, it was more about trying to kind of get more production and more. But now it's kind of just about cost reduction and what more you can do to reduce the cost of your overheads, you know.
Yeah.
So it's important, I think, for everybody. But I think more so now in the past 2 or 3 years, everybody's kind of, you know, keeping an eye on that bottom line and where there can be cost reductions. People are jumping at the chance. Do you know what I mean? And that's the way business is at the moment. And I suppose that's the same across every industry as well. You know, it's not just about the fishing industry, but about every industry.
Would it be fair to say that, you know, quite a few companies, one of the biggest decisions is, you know, when to take that step? You've got a advice on something and you can invest on a more energy efficient system and the payback might be 5 years or 8 years or whatever. And, you know, you may have to make that capital investment up front, but you do have to look at the long-term benefit.
Yeah, and it's all about the long-term benefit now. You know, you need to safeguard now for in the future, you know. And I think that's important for everybody. I mean, if they can do that, if they can see the bigger picture and know that this is going to bring, you know, as you say, if it's a 5-year payback or something, after those 5 years, then, you know, you're home and free. Do you know what I mean? And it's important for people to know that. But at the same time as well, not just in this industry, but our fishing industry, but every industry, it's harder and harder to have excess cash flow, access to banks. Do you know what I mean? So you have to have your, you know, the right head on you to kind of get into it and make sure that you're doing the right thing. And I think that's where the energy advisors or consultants would kind of be able to help that way, because they'll have seen people doing it before. They'll have case studies, they'll have proof. They'll know which systems are correct, which ones maybe aren't as good, you know, which ones are efficient and which ones aren't. So it's important to get that advice. But if you can get, I suppose, a grant, you know, from whether it's your local enterprise office or Enterprise Ireland, you know, I mean, they have great supports and great systems in place there that are definitely well worth looking at and well worth looking into. And I think if somebody can access that, why wouldn't you? It's free advice, you know, and if you can save something on it, you know, jump at the chance at it, you know.
Absolutely. So looking ahead the next 12 months or so, any particular ambitions or plans or objectives?
Well, I suppose for Killybegs Energy, for us, it'll be about getting the pellet up and running and get that system commissioned and ready to go. And then it'll be about launching, you know, our brand and trying to kind of get in, you know, just to get a little bit of market share on, you know, whether it's wood log or whether it's the pellet. And then we also do the industrial wood chip as well, you know, for, you know, burners and stuff. So there's a lot getting out there. It was great to win the award to get a bit of, I suppose, you know, put our heads out there and for people to know it's there. And now it's about kind of getting our market material ready and everything pushed out. I'm just letting people know that we're here, and, you know, it's a good kind of circular economy product, and, you know, it might be good for going forward for people that they know that this is kind of localized and it's in Donegal, and, you know, it's all kind of Irish based and Irish production, you know.
Yeah. And do we know at this stage the wood logs, if I'm down in my local petrol station or in the co-op, have you decided on the name yet?
No, well, at the moment, we're just going by Killybegs Energy, and I think we haven't come up with it could stay like that. I'm not sure. We're talking about QR codes on pack and stuff to be able to tell a story in the video that way. But the branding-wise, it'll probably stay at Killybegs Energy, we think. You know what I mean? So it'll be that you'll be looking out for, you know.
Well, we look forward to seeing those products in our local stores. Michael, many thanks for joining us, and we wish you the best of luck in the future.
And that was Michael O'Donnell of Killybegs Energy. Join me again after the break when I'll be finding out more about what was a record year for Ireland West Airport, which continues to play an important role in the West of Ireland economy, and that includes Donegal.
If you're starting or growing a business, make your first stop Local Enterprise Office Donegal. Get information on all the state supports available and get signposted to other supports and relevant bodies. Whether you're a new entrepreneur or an existing small business owner, start at localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Welcome back. Ireland West Airport is reaching new heights with a record number of passengers being recorded last year, and people from Donegal are among those who are benefiting from an ever-increasing range of destinations. Donal Healy, Head of Marketing, Ireland West Airport NOC, has been telling me more.
2024, as you mentioned there, has proven to be the busiest year on record at the airport, so we're reporting passenger numbers in the region of 834,000 have used the airport, so a record year, and we're delighted that people are continuing to find the airport an attractive place to fly in and out of.
And just to refresh the memories, of course, in the early years under Monsignor Horan's great leadership, when things started back in NOC, it was perceived as being a white elephant. There was many an economist in Dublin who was saying this was never going to work, but you've more than proved that it's a success story, and what a difference it has made to an awful lot of people, particularly west of the Shannon.
It has, yeah. When you, it's well documented, Chris, and when you look back at the archive footage, which is still available and still fantastic, look back all the years ago, as you said there, was a large region at the time the airport was built, but the Monsignor, God bless him, he had a vision. He wanted an airport for the west and northwest of Ireland. He had visions of a runway that could take jet-capable aircraft, that could connect the west of Ireland with the UK, Europe, and further afield. And if he was alive today, I think, you know, when you look at the vision many years ago, that's 24 and almost 35 years, over 35 years ago, everything he wished for, it couldn't be more appropriate, and he had the vision and foresight to put that into fruition here in the west of Ireland. So we were very, very appreciative and thankful for his vision to get us where we are today.
And another man, a household name, a certain Michael O'Leary, you know, fair to say Ryanair has certainly played its part with your success in Ireland West Airport, because it has developed numerous routes.
It has, yeah. When you think Ryanair first started flying to the airport in the early 90s, and not only have we enjoyed a record year here at the airport, but they've also enjoyed a record year for passenger numbers using their services in and out of the airport. So they've been very loyal partners to both the airport and indeed the west of Ireland over the last 30 plus years. And without them, certainly our level of success wouldn't be where it is. And, you know, they're an iconic Irish brand, and love them or hate them, they've opened up the west of Ireland for an awful lot of people to keep in touch with loved ones, to holiday, to visit places they probably never would have thought of before, Chris. So we're a lot of people owe a lot of debt and gratitude to Ryanair.
Yeah. Now, for people in Donegal going through NOC Airport, either going or coming back from somewhere, Donegal making up a significant proportion of your passengers.
Yeah, certainly. And I suppose it's testament to the growth that we've enjoyed, Chris, in that we've got a lot of new passengers from all around the region. So for the airport to grow, obviously, we have to attract in more and more people, more and more first-time using the airport. And, you know, typically, Donegal have been a very, very loyal supporter of Donegal people at the airport and vice versa. As I mentioned to you off air there, Red Sea carried out some recent research and they showed that between 5 and 10% of all overseas visitors who come into the airport actually go and visit Donegal as part of their stay, and indeed stay in the region of on average 6 nights when they come to the airport. So that's, you know, that's a massive contribution to the local Donegal economy. And on the flip side of that, numbers using the airport from the Donegal region are up in the region of about 10%. So between 40,000 and 50,000 people from Donegal use the airport every year to fly out. So
it's a bit of a wintry time of year here at the moment. Seasonality comes into play when you're talking about airports. And August, I take it, is the busiest month?
Yeah, August will be the busiest month of the year every year. And, you know, kids are off school, and particularly in August, you're actually starting to look to go back to school. So it's the most popular time of the year. Indeed, at all airports, for pretty much families using the airport an awful lot to get in the last week of a sun holiday or get a short trip abroad to the UK or Europe. So August tends to be the busiest month of the year every year, yeah.
Yeah, and talking of sun holidays, you have quite a lot of destinations, the likes of Alicante, Barcelona, Faro, Malaga, and of course the Canary Islands as well. And that holiday traffic is, you know, significant for your business.
Yeah, it certainly has been, Chris. And in particular last year, I think numbers were up about 5% using our sun routes. And it's a major component of the growth of the airport, and it's testament to the likes of Ryanair, who have added new services to the sun. Indeed, last year, they re-added the Lanzarote and Tenerife services back to the airport, which have proven hugely popular. Them two routes and our Malaga service actually operate all year round, so they're actually operating through the winter. So we have a Malaga service and a Lanzarote service today, and that's very welcome for people who want a bit of winter sun, particularly when you're looking out your window the last few days. If you can get away to Tenerife or Lanzarote for less than a couple of hundred euros and enjoy 25 degrees of sunshine, it's certainly better than -3 here and what it is in Mayo over the last couple of days.
Indeed. So tell us, Donal, in terms of the most popular routes, is it to London?
Yeah, London would be our biggest market. We have, on some occasions there, we have 5 to 6 services day in and out of the airport to London Heathrow with Aer Lingus. They did an excess of 90,000 passengers last year. And that is a gateway we get. You can check your bag in at Knock, collect it then in like New York, Toronto, Washington. So you can, it's a seamless check-in experience here at our airport on Aer Lingus or using their codeshare partners such as BA, and then pick your bag up. So that's been hugely popular, and that has continued to grow from strength to strength. And then of course you have Stansted and Luton with Ryanair, which, you know, is carrying excess of 300,000 passengers a year. Very, very popular services. But when you flip it over then on the sun side, you have the likes of Faro, Algarve in Portugal, and Girona in Barcelona, two of the most popular sun routes we'd have, along with Alicante. And then you have your Canary Islands, which are popular all year round.
An airport requires continued investment from not just the facilities within the terminal, but also safety-related matters and improving communication. So in recent times, what have been the major areas of improvement in Knock?
Yeah, it comes as part of the project. Airports are very heavily regulated and very expensive to maintain and ensure you continually comply with safe, international safety and security regulations. So, for example, in last year alone, the airport would have invested in partnership with the Department of Transport in excess of €7 million in completion. Critical upgrades such as the purchase of new fire engines, upgrading of airfield ground lighting, a complete upgrade of the electrical infrastructure at the airport. These are things, Chris, probably passengers wouldn't see every day, you know, but they're critical parts of the airport's operation that have to be maintained and upgraded continuously. And of course, as well, a major part of our future development is sustainability, and we continue to invest in reducing our carbon footprint and continue to invest in replacing vehicles, fuel and diesel vehicles, with electric vehicles. And we've planned in at the minute in for planning for a new solar farm, which could generate up to 20 to 30% of the airport's electricity requirements over the coming years. So major investment is required every year just to stay compliant with safety and security, but also to invest in the infrastructure so that we can continue to provide the level of service and the level of enhancements that passengers need, especially the modern age traveller looking for modern facilities that an airport provides close to 1 million passengers has to provide.
And to get to that goal of 1 million passengers, is there enough capacity within the airport as it stands?
Yeah, certainly the airport itself has capacity for an excess of 1 million passengers. But that said, Chris, there's always areas of the infrastructure that need to develop and need to, you know, the airport was built in the early 80s, so there's there's always parts that need to be brought to the modern day, and we know there's always parts of it as well that need to be enhanced to ensure we can cater for an excess of 1 million passengers. Like this year alone, we're forecasting that we will go north of that 834,000 passengers and probably break the 850,000 mark. So we are creeping up to it. But look, we have plans. We've major development plans that will ensure that if we do reach that, that the facility itself and the infrastructure is well catered to provide that magical experience that people love when they use the airport.
We've mentioned Aer Lingus, we've mentioned Ryanair. Lauda Europe, another airline that uses Ireland West.
Yeah, Lauda have been operating the Mallorca service, very popular sun service to Mallorca. So a popular part of the Balearic Islands are very popular with holidaymakers. And indeed, we actually have a new service this year coming in from Groningen, I think I got that right, in the Netherlands. And that's going to be a charter service, predominantly inbound, operated by leading Dutch operator BBI Travel. So that's going to be a weekly service from Groningen into the west and northwest of Ireland every week from June to September. And that will bring in the region of between 1,000 and 2,000 Dutch tourists into the region, hopefully spending money in local restaurants, in local tourism activities, and giving a bit of a much-needed boost for the west of Ireland economy.
The airport currently serves more than 20 international destinations. When you're negotiating with carriers and trying to expand the options there, how long can the lead-in time be from, you mentioned there, Groningen, that a project like that from maybe the conception to actually the plane touching the tarmac?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question, and it varies, but typically if you think of the Groningen service, we had actually started discussions last November, 12 months, and that route will start in June, so that gives you an idea of the leading work that's required. And at the minute now, we're going to a major airline conference next month. We are talking to airlines now about next winter and the following summer. So you're always probably 12 to 18 months behind in terms of when a route, you could be lucky enough to actually get a route to start, because the nature of the business crisis is very seasonal. So at the minute, the winter schedule is bedded in. It's been embedded in for 12 months. So that operates typically from October to March. And then you kick into your summer season, and that's April to October, and the summer schedule would have been finalised last probably August. So you are looking now beyond that to the winter schedule next year, so the 2025-2026. But airlines tend not to probably launch too many services during the winter period, because it is a quieter time of year, particularly for regional airports like ourselves. So really the earnest conversations and the more thorough conversations about new routes for us, we're looking at summer 2026 now at this stage. Now, things can always pop in and pop out, but we're hoping we'd be getting this extra capacity on existing services. The conversations we'll be having with airlines now next month will largely be looking at summer 2026, believe it or not.
And what about employment at the airport, between indirect and full-time and part-time? Can you put an actual figure on it?
Yeah, there's about in the region of 200 people working in the airport on a daily basis. Obviously, during the summertime between April and October, where you'd operate probably the bulk of that 834,000 passengers, that's when most people would be on site. So you'd have a lot of students, a lot of young people working during that period. But typically between 200 to 250 would be on site during the summer. Probably reduces down a bit during the winter when you have less of a schedule. But that's the kind of numbers that would be employed, Chris, all year round. Of course, you have the spin-off, and Ernst & Young estimate that the airport supports employment across the region of an excess of 3,000, supporting, you know, about 200 million back into the local economy. So it's a major contributor from local employment and in terms of the economic benefits it brings to the region.
And tell us a little bit about the strategic development zone. What exactly is that?
The strategic development zone was approved by, I think, this government back in 2017, 2018. What it does, it gives certainty on the planning process. So there's a certain acreage of land at the airport that has been zoned as a strategic development zone. So it enjoys tax exemptions for businesses looking to set up or to build. It's a hugely important part of the airport's future business and how we can expand the airport campus, as we'd like to call it, and create more jobs. It has the potential to deliver in the region of about 3,000 jobs once fully developed. We were delighted last year to welcome the appointment of Dominic Healy, who's the new project manager at the Strategic Development Fund. And we will certainly be working with government and our local authority partners and Dominic in putting together a kind of a blueprint and a plan that could really, really stimulate employment in the west of Ireland, and we'd be very hopeful that we can develop that out to its true potential over the next 18 months.
Access to the airport itself is important, and the road network has improved. There's ongoing talk about the Western Rail Corridor being extended, and I presume you welcome all investment that's going to make it easier for people to get through to and from the airport.
Yeah, absolutely. We would be regularly supporting both the Greenway and the Western Rail track and, you know, improvements in road infrastructure, because it is critically important as the airport continues to grow. And as we said, we wish to go north of 1 million passengers, that the transport infrastructure that links into the airport is sufficient. Because what you see is you see Dutch, Italians, Germans coming into the west of Ireland. They're so used to travelling around major cities and in, you know, very well-connected rail networks and road networks and transport infrastructure connecting these airports. And that's quite lacking at the airport at the minute. So we have had very positive conversations about all modes of transport, especially bus service as well, which are very important. There's 5 buses a day at the minute connecting Letterkenny and Galway on Route 64, which all connect into the airport, and they have proved very popular, particularly with Donegal people. So the build-out of that, in particular in the short to medium term, is critically important, getting more bus services added. But long-term, certainly the development of some form of rail connectivity to the airport will be critically important, and certainly the upgrading on the N17 and that road in particular from Sligo to the airport, which I know Sligo Chamber have been very heavily in lobbying.
Yeah. Now, just briefly back to the passenger figures that you compile. Do you actually get a breakdown as to the proportion of people who are maybe on business or leisure or different categories of travel?
We do anecdotally through some of our own research and through some of the Red Sea stuff, and we also profile passengers through our online car parking system. But typically what you'll be looking at is about 65% of people using the airport would be what we'd call VFR, visiting friends and relatives. And that's largely owing to the huge diaspora markets between the west of Ireland and particularly in the UK. When you look at our UK network there, we've 9 different routes. It's the biggest number of services connecting the UK and Ireland outside of Dublin Airport. So I think we have connections to Birmingham, East Midlands, Liverpool, Manchester, Bristol, the 3 London routes that I mentioned, Edinburgh. That's largely supported by the diaspora market. And so that BFR element is very, very strong. Then about 20% of the profile would be holiday makers, so exclusively people travelling for holiday purposes. And then between 8 and 10% would be business, or people working for commuting for work purposes. So that's your typical breakdown. And that has remained kind of consistent over the last number of years, but as I mentioned earlier, the introduction of the Heathrow service has certainly seen that figure go a bit higher, with more business people using that Heathrow service to connect not just outbound but also inbound from markets all across the globe.
And finally, irrespective of what happens in Dublin with the cap and whatever numbers, I take it that you're pretty upbeat that the only way is up as far as Ireland West is concerned for the next few years?
Yeah, certainly the forecast for this year, we don't like to get too far ahead, because there's always things that happen in this industry that can bring you back down to earth. And you think the likes of COVID, what happened there over a couple of years, and different challenges and things going on in economies and in just globally generally. But certainly for the next 12 months, the outlook looks very positive, and we're very much like all the other airports in the regions. We feel there's a lot more potential and scope to develop more access into the regions, as well as Dublin Airport. So Dublin Airport is obviously the biggest airport in the country, accounting for over 90% of the traffic into the country. But there's certainly, as we've proven, as have the other regional airports, proven that if routes do come into the west and northwest of Ireland and other parts of regional Ireland, that they can be supported. And they certainly what they do is they bring tourists directly to where they want to go. For example, we know 40% of all German visitors that come to Ireland come from the west to Ireland. We have a service in from Cologne twice a week during the summer, but we're the only airport in the region that has a service from Germany. So that's why the likes of this Groningen service from the Netherlands, they're hugely important, because these tourists want to go direct to the west and west of Ireland, but there is no access. So it is important that there is some form of regional access program put in that can stimulate airlines to put in more access into the regions, as well as growing the bigger airports. So that certainly would be our priority in discussions with new government in the coming months and the different various departments, and how can regional aviation develop and prosper.
And that was Donal Healy, Head of Marketing, Ireland West Airport in Knock. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. If you wish to contact the programme, you can email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com. Until the next time, from me, Chris Ashmore, may I wish you a happy, healthy and profitable week. Goodbye.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.